The story of Henry Clay Frick. On a stormy winter night in 1849 in the town of West Overton, Pennsylvania, a son was born to Elizabeth and John Frick, destined to one day be the Coke King of America. As a boy, the son Henry suffered from ill health, but his life on his father's farm helped him to overcome his physical ailments, and he grew into a stalwart lad. After working 3 years as a bookkeeper in his uncle's distillery, Henry decided at 21 years of age that the only way he would ever achieve great wealth was to enter business for himself. One day, the young man and a group of four of his friends approached a little office in Connellsville, a town in the heart of the coal district.
Here we are.
Why did you bring us down to this dingy-looking office, Henry?
It looks more like a hole in the wall than an office.
Why are you grinning, Henry? Use something up your sleeve.
Sit down. I want to talk to all of you about a serious matter.
You sound like the chairman of a board of directors calling a meeting to order.
Well, in a sense, I am.
What do you mean?
Is this a joke?
No, it isn't a joke. I have a proposition to make.
Go ahead. Let's hear it.
What's on your mind, Henry?
Yeah. Well, as you fellows know, I've always wanted to be an artist, to write. But now I realize that, well, I'd better make some money first. I want to go into business, the Coke business, and I want the four of you to go in with me.
And where would we get any money? I don't have any, only my salary.
Oh, it's too big an undertaking. We're all too young.
We're never too young to start in for ourselves. If the rest of you aren't willing, I'll start the company myself, somehow.
Well, tell us more about your plans, Henry. How much money will you need? You can't just jump into something like that.
Well, I have the plans formulated. We'll need $15,000. That isn't much, but we can start with that.
Well, that's $3,000 apiece. That's a lot of money to lose if we go under.
I'm not starting with the negative side in view. I'm going to make our company a success, with your help, if you're willing.
You've always had the ability to make people believe in you, Henry. Even when you were a kid in school. I'll go in with you.
Mm-hmm, so will I.
And I. Oh, I forgot to mention that I've just rented this dingy hole, as you called it. It's going to be our first office.
Thus, the four young men, led by the confident Henry Frick, founded the business that was to bring millions for all of them. But in the beginning, the way was not an easy one. Henry Frick and his associates worked 18 hours a day, month after month, and the Coke business was growing steadily, but the need for additional finances was imperative. Henry Clay Frick decided upon a daring course of action. He would approach Judge Thomas Mellon, the tycoon of Pittsburgh, and request financial aid for the young company.
That is the story, Judge Mellon.
You're asking for a great deal of money, young man.
Not a great deal as you count it, Judge Mellon.
You certainly believe in yourself, don't you, Henry Frick?
Well, sir, I believe in my capabilities. I know that with the money I propose to borrow from you, I can expand my business and pay you back within a year with a handsome profit.
A year? And you have nothing but your tiny business to offer as security for $100,000?
Only that tiny business. My self-confidence and my word.
Well, somehow I believe you are capable. I like you, and I'm not very often wrong in my judgment of a man. I'll give you the money on your word.
And Judge Thomas Mellon's belief in Henry Clay Frick was the beginning of the expeditious rising of a man whose name was to go down in American financial history as a genius. A King Midas whose every negotiation became an amazing success. At 30, Henry Clay Frick had amassed $1 million, but he had worked hard, and it was imperative that he take a vacation. With Andrew Mellon, later Secretary of the United States Treasury, he sailed for Europe, and the trip was indeed a revelation for the youthful millionaire. The centers of art and culture in the old world drew him like a magnet. Then he returned to America and married Adelaide Howard Childs. On their wedding trip to New York, he received a call from Carnegie.
I've been watching your career for some time, Henry.
Yes?
I like the way you do business.
Well, that is flattering, coming from Andrew Carnegie.
Not flattering. Just common sense. Henry. How would you like another partner in your business?
That would depend entirely on the person wishing to invest in the company.
Would you have any objections to me as a partner?
I think not.
You don't seem surprised.
There's no reason to be. The H.C. Frick Coke Company is the largest Coke company in the world. The business is important enough even for Andrew Carnegie to take an interest in it.
How much stock will you sell me?
Not too much. The majority must always be mine.
You know, it has always been a habit of mine in the past to control the stock of the companies in which I am interested.
Well, then, sir, I'm afraid you'll have to change that habit in this instance. The controlling interest is mine, and I mean to keep it. I built that company up from nothing. I don't intend to turn it over to others, no.
Not even for a handsome profit?
Not for every penny you own, Mr. Carnegie. The control stays in my hands.
Andrew Carnegie purchased stock in the company, but Henry Clay Frick kept the majority in his hands despite Andrew Carnegie's endeavoring to obtain control. For a while, they quarreled over company policy, but finally the two business geniuses forgot their differences, and Carnegie even invited Frick to become a partner in Carnegie Brothers and Company. Then Frick completely reorganized the steel business. It was an Herculean task, but he succeeded in organizing and controlling the world's largest steel and coke operations. Then came the industrial strike in Homestead, Pennsylvania in 1892. The violence was increasing in intensity. Carnegie was in Scotland and Frick in sole charge. In the conference room of the company offices, a group of white-faced, tight-lipped men were seated.
Better get back to your window, Henry. Don't let them see.
They make enough noise for a looting army.
Oh, the mob is getting louder all the time.
Now they're fighting the guards in order to get into the building. Just look at them. There must be 5,000 men out there.
This plant and this building are private property. If I have to ask the governor to call out the militia, I'll defend this property from the hands of that mob.
You've got to get out of here. It's suicide to stay here. That mob is crazy. They won't stop at any violence.
And this is my property. I won't sneak away. I fight for the things that belong to me.
Better give in to their demands, Henry. I have to compromise. But they threaten to burn the whole plant.
Well, if we give way now, we're beaten. The demands are unfair. They're unjust and contrary to American business freedom. This strike will be settled surely, but in my way. A mob of foreign agitators can't stir up my men and take away the things I've given my whole life to build. I'll treat them fairly, but I won't be bullied into it.
Look, look there at the window.
Oh.
Henry!
Oh. We warned him.
Stop him. Stop him.
Murder. Murder.
Henry, are you all right?
Yes. Yes, I'm all right. Just a slight wound, I think.
Get a doctor. Quickly.
The guards have caught him. Bring him in.
Who is he?
Bring him in.
Stop him, right?
The foreign agitator, bring him up.
Get in there.
No. No. I have done only what is right. He is a tyrant. All tyrants must die. Then the world will be a decent place to live in. I'll kill them all. All. Do you hear?
No. Wait. He's not to blame. He's just a pawn. He can't help what he does. He's been incited by the enemies of business. This one man doesn't mean a thing. They're trying to strike at us through the mob. They always will. What's your name, son?
Joe Kratovsky.
Give him some money and let him go. He'll soon learn. I want no violence. We'll win. We'll win, we always have. We'll win because we're right.
And Henry Clay Frick did win through those chaotic days of bloodshed and strike. The strike was settled and Frick continued to soar in the financial world. In 1901, he acted as intermediary between the Morgan interests and the Rockefeller interests in the formation of the United States Steel Corporation. He found time to act as director in railroad developments and in 1905 helped to reorganize the Equitable Life Insurance Company. He was now living in New York in a handsome mansion on Fifth Avenue. In the pretentious house was constructed an art gallery. A new picture by one of the old masters was being hung, and Henry Clay Frick stood by with his son, watching the workmen.
This art gallery and the treasures in this house represent a boyhood dream to me, son.
Well, I didn't think you were ever inclined to dreaming of pictures and art treasures, Father.
No, I don't suppose you would think that of me. But when I was 15 years old, I thought that someday I might be a great writer.
My life turned out differently than I had planned it in those days.
But you're one of the country's most powerful financiers. Now, surely that's worth more than a boyhood dream.
If it could have been possible to combine the dream and the actuality. But if I could not create things of beauty myself, at least I can collect those of the great masters, eh?
This house is like a museum, Father. Every day you add something more to the collection.
I shall spend the rest of my life doing that, son. And someday this house and all the collection will be given to the public as a museum. Beauty should be the birthright of every human being. These art treasures should be available for all the world to see.
Well, do you think that your artistic dreams did anything to help your career as a businessman, Father?
Why, yes, son, I'm certain they did. The beauty of pictures and of literature gave me an awareness, a sensitiveness, which was my greatest mainstay in the business world. Without vision, a man does not dare to do things which involve risks. And without daring, a man will never move beyond his own door.
And thus, the boyhood desire to be an artist gave Henry Clay Frick the power and will to scale almost insurmountable obstacles in his rise to the pinnacle of success. His was the courage of a great man. His gift to the American public, a mansion filled with priceless treasures of artistic beauty. The gift has become a museum which thousands of people visit every year. Here is housed one of the finest collections of works of the great masters the world has ever known. This man with the soul of an artist became one of the greatest financial powers in the world. Henry Clay Frick, Captain of Industry.